Welcome to 21 Grams Speaks, the podcast where I, Dennis, the creator of 21 Grams, chat with my talented friends about a wide range of topics from mental health, addiction, and recovery to religion and politics. We dive into honest conversations to broaden our perspectives and share them with you. Thank you for joining us as we explore the complexities of these subjects, bringing you thought-provoking insights. I'm Dennis, your host, and this is 21 Grams Speaks. What's up, guys? This is Dennis from 21 Grams. We are on season 2, episode 2. I'm really excited for the guest host today, a good friend of mine, someone I've known for the majority of my entire leather crafting career, somebody that's been incredibly supportive and someone I call a close friend. It is Brian Boot Hunter, my man. Good to have you, and thank you so much for being on the show today.
Hey Dennis, it's great to be with you.
Absolutely.
I miss our talks.
Me too. I miss it so much. Like I said in the intro, you've been somebody that has been so supportive, sharing my work. If the listeners aren't aware, can you kind of tell them what your role is within the community? Because I think you have a unique role and you've got a certain amount of respect and, you know, as the kids say, the street cred.
Well, you know, it's, my journey has been interesting because I started on Instagram back when a group of partners and I, this is back in 2014, way back, started a fashion tech company out of Chicago that was designed to link up guys with their style. And once they played a style game that we created, we linked them up with brands, retail, you know, product that would fit with their style, whatever they were going to be doing, whether it was a job or they were going out, they were going to a wedding. It was just something that they could just wear every day, casual. So it was very aspirational and inspirational at the same time. And we developed a really killer technology and algorithm to connect them with that. And when we sold the company, I went through a withdrawal, as a lot of entrepreneurs do. And I was really, I had already been hooked. I was always into clothing and well-made things and heritage and handmade footwear and things like that. And I was a sneakerhead, and I went through all, you know, a lot of the phases that a lot of us go through. And I missed all the interaction that I had through StyleSeek. That was the name of the company. And so I decided, you know, I'm going to start my own brand, and I'm going to do apparel, and I'll do it using a model like Gustin and others that were using sort of a crowd sale platform. And so I set out to do that while I was also working a full-time job, and I was teaching and other things. And that was the beginning of what became Boot Hunter. But in between, I created this brand called Merchants Harbor. At the time, I was living in Denmark. So I was living in Copenhagen. And yeah. I figured out that the translation of Copenhagen into English was Merchants Harbor. And I thought, wow, what a great name. So I secured the name and the website and other stuff. And I started building a community on Instagram, as I did with StyleSeek, with inspirational photos of 1850 to 1950 Scandinavian, Northern Tier North American you know,
that's a niche. That's a niche.
History. Yeah, right.
You got and it nailed.
I started, I stepped back and I was like, okay, now I'm getting people that love ships. I'm getting people that love old, you know, lighthouses and people that love suspenders and cool hats at jaunty angles, you know, whatever. And I was like, this isn't really going to get me anywhere. And so I started thinking, what is it that brings the guys that I want to connect with for my future brand over? And it came down to watches or footwear, really.
Yeah.
And watches was so saturated, and also just not quite succinct and specific enough.
Right.
And not really a passion that I had to the extent that I did with footwear. And I was literally like looking at some pictures of my grandfather, who was fire chief of Chicago, and his boots and his hat and stuff. And I was thinking that history and that heritage is what has always been so fascinating to me ever since I was a kid. So it became boots, and I had lots of boots, and I was and am an avid hiker. You know, I've got house in the desert, house in the mountains. I love to travel. And yeah. I started thinking, well, how about if I focus on, you know, travel, exploring, and boots, and really putting boots to the test across everything from the city to the beach to the country to the mountains to the desert. I mean, you name it. That was the beginning.
It's such a cool page too. If people that are listening aren't following you, definitely do it. It's been a huge, I mean, for me, we started talking and communicating while I was just making wallets. And then I've kind of transformed into making sandals, which is footwear. Right. And you've always been so supportive. Now I'm into making boots and like dress shoes. Not just that, but like through the whole thing, you've been so supportive. And I just want to thank you, because it's rad to like knowing some of these people that you interact with and the people that you help support and push out there. To even have my stuff next to theirs is something that is so, it's so cool to me. I can't thank you enough, man.
Oh, listen, I mean, yeah, it's such a huge pleasure for me. And that's really part of the withdrawal I was going through, was in selling the company. I had been working with more than 400 small craft makers. And I was really missing that interaction. And when I started Boot Hunter, that was one of the first things I did, was I started to reach out to, you know, the small to medium size handcrafted cobblers, shoemakers, bootmakers, etc. And then I thought, well, why don't I take this, you know, a couple of steps further, use my consulting, my expertise with startup. I've had a startup space that I created actually for makers. It was a very unique startup space called Prefab Space. And I actually crowdfunded it. I kickstarted it.
Oh, right.
All the while I was doing my startup and teaching, mentoring startups and whatnot. And so I've always been passionate about, you know, about small business and helping small businesses. And then that dovetailed into my podcast, into the Maker's Mic, which I need to get back to. And I hope I'm going to get back into it more, just the last several months have changed so many things, that is something that I really want to get back to. But definitely helping, you know, people like yourself.
It's incredible.
And figure out, you know, what are the opportunities and where's your special sauce? You know, it's like, what is it that makes you unique?
Yeah.
And really stand out. And that's tapping into what you're really passionate about, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So. It's yeah, like I said, it's an incredible honor. And I'm so thankful. I mean, I think the first time that I saw you, you were doing some kind of Instagram live, I believe, with Parker from formerly Stock and Barrel. And yeah. I heard that conversation and then we just started chatting and then I ended up going on there. Then I think I've had you on one of mine and we've always That's communicated right. Like not even like every few months. It's like at least weekly we're saying what's up and checking in with each other. And,
oh, absolutely.
It's just, it's so cool. And man, some of the stuff that you post has been, like I said, so inspirational where I screenshot them before I'm coming up with designs for boots. And I'm like, man, this is awesome. So unique and so cool. And I've found a lot of bootmakers as that's kind of the direction that I'm going in, or a portion of the direction that I'm going in off right. of your page. And then I follow them and I start chatting with them and developing a relationship like I did with the whole like traditional leather craft community, the people that make, you know, smaller leather goods, where I have an incredible relationship with these people from all over the world, you know, and that's what I'm trying right. to accumulate with the boot and shoemaking world. And a lot of the people come directly from your resourcing. So I thank you, man.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, it takes us places where we don't imagine. I mean, I was first approached actually by Nick's out of Spokane to do a collaboration boot. And that became the Urban Logger. And that sort of started a whole sequence of, you know, being connected with and then being approached by, or my approaching, it's kind of been both, makers to collaborate on boot designs, which has been a real blast as well.
I could only imagine. You know, I still need to get those sandals out that I made for you. And I still have them here in my office, in my packing station. And there was something so special to me when I stamped Boot Hunter on the strap of the sandal. And I was like, it was one of those, like, I made it moments. Like, I felt like really, yeah. really, really stoked about that. And I don't know, it's special. I get the opportunity. I've, you know, worked with a handful of, you know, celebrities, but doing something for someone that's a friend and that's, you've done so much for other people. I could go on and on and on about, you know, gloating and puffing you up, Brian, but you know, we got other stuff to talk about.
yeah.
You're like, no, more.
No.
That's great. So who are some of the people do you believe like inspiring shoemakers or bootmakers like myself that you really think people should keep an eye on, and who's really impressing you as of lately?
Wow. You know, I mean, the best way to look at that is, you know, who do I feature in my stories? There's so many. I mean, there's a bunch of guys that, and some women as well that, that I feature on a pretty regular basis. You know what, I guess what I look for is, you know, people that wear them out in places. I mean, along with their travel, along with their daily life, whatever it might be. You know, it's ridiculous when I go on my road trips I have like maybe five things to wear clothing wise, but I'll have like 50 pairs of boots. I mean, this last trip, I narrowed it down quite a bit. I probably had 25 pairs. I mean, it's
that's funny.
You know, people say, well, why don't you fly? Well, that's one of the reasons I don't fly. There's no way I can get all those boots, you know, on a flight. But I just love being on the road, and yeah. I'll be driving along and see a spot like a rock that looks like a cathedral in the middle of the desert. And I'm like, oh my gosh, that reminds me of this boot. And I get off the road, jump out, grab the boots. And that's me. I look at, you know, and tend to follow guys that, you know, like I said, whether it's their neighborhood on their street, there's, you know, there are guys that we have fun back and forth with each other's photos, like, you know, conjure up little other images to add in and stuff.
Sure.
That's why I say it's always changing. It's always, there's a lot of different people that I find inspiring. It's so hard to narrow it down. I think it's, like I said, the best way is to follow and see who I repost in my stories. That's one of the things that I did at the very beginning that was very unique. And I will say it really helped me grow from the beginning, 5 years, 6 years ago, whatever it was I sort of took the model of, you know, featuring as if they were writers, like the Huffington Post model, right? I remember reading a number of years ago, a writer from the New York Times saying, why would people ever listen to non-professional journalists? Why would they ever tune into or read a magazine or newspaper that provided content by novices, by non-professionals? And that was so grating to me.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, I want to be the opposite. And that's what I started doing, is I started to reach out, just as we did with StyleSeek, with bloggers and featuring bloggers and their content. I started featuring just everyday guys that were making posts. Hey, I really love that picture you took of your boots. You know, tell me more. What do you think about them? Would you mind if I shared? I'll tag you. I'll tag the brand, etc. So I did a lot of that in the beginning to mid stage of kind of growing Boot Hunter as well. And now I do it more as part of my story. And a big part of that is simply because my boot collection and the boot collaborations and my own travels were taking me so many different places that I had enough of my own content that I couldn't fit other.
That's insane, because you put out a lot of content. That's all your boots in those photos.
In my gallery, 99%.
That's insane. I had no idea. I thought that you were, I know for me, I mean, you share my stuff, and I think that, you know, that's awesome. But I thought that a lot of those photos, you did what you were saying at the beginning, you reach out to these people. Hey, do you mind if I share? But that's insane. I know you have a lot of boots, obviously, but there's some I'm like, oh my God, like, how do you even collect that many pairs of boots? You just buy a new pair of boots every 2 weeks?
I mean, sometimes there's a new pair or two a week. I mean, God. You know, and I love all of them, and they're all like, you know, I display them. I'm very lucky that I'm single. So in my houses, I've got, you know, bookcases that I've basically transformed into. I didn't get rid of books. I just didn't put books Right. Instead, it's boots.
When I was building
out the bar in the desert house, I thought, you know, now that I'm not really drinking, what am I going to do with this bar? I've got a 10-foot bar.
Yeah.
With this huge storage area and these glass shelves and whatnot. And so I made it into a boot bar.
That's rad.
So it, you know, it's displaying boots now. Yeah.
How do you break in two pairs of boots in 1 week?
It you know what? Honestly, it's tough. It's really tough now. It wasn't tough for me before. Since, and for those that don't know, when I was diagnosed and totally shocked, diagnosed with cancer back in late October, early November, I had been having some back pain, which I couldn't really explain, other than all the house construction I was doing. I was doing a lot of moving. I was moving furniture to my property in Wyoming, and that was the only thing I could explain for the pain that I was having in my back. It ended up becoming so bad that I had to go to urgent care, and they did some MRIs and found basically the cancer. And it's been a really rough, I mean, this has been, you know, by far the greatest challenge of my life.
Absolutely, it's, I'm sure.
There is no experience like this. And I, you know, just the fact that I'm not right now hiking as I did, because the cancer went after my spine, did damage to my spine. I've had some of it repaired. I have to be really careful.
Right.
I have to be extremely cautious. And then I've got issues with my lung, where I have fluid buildup, and it's difficult for me to, you know, go on long walks and hikes and whatnot. So it's
the main thing is to just obviously focus on your recovery, and
yeah,
that doesn't provide a lot of opportunities to do the hiking that you had done
before,
obviously, which is man, that's crazy.
It's kind of like, you know, I did this road trip over the last month, and a friend of mine from grad school came out. We drove literally right after my chemo. We jumped in the car and started driving, and drove from San Diego to St. George, Utah. And so cruised around St. George, did some little micro hikes. And as I call them, it's like just getting out and picking up the dirt, you know, and doing some exploring, more driving from point to point than I would have done before. But those enable me also to get, you know, to get out there and to try things out and whatnot. Plus the fact that, I mean, both of my houses, I live in the middle of the forest. So I walk out my door and I'm in the forest.
So you're hiking, you know? Just out right. Front. Once I mean, you get off your porch, you're hiking.
Exactly. I don't have to go that far. The desert, the same thing.
Yeah.
The desert trails, it's right there. So,
right. Do you find that even just like what you just described, like getting out and doing micro hikes and, you know, kicking around dirt, helps you in your recovery? Maybe not the physical part, but the mental part, just knowing, okay, well, this is the progress. This is what we're going to get back to, like just to lift your spirits. Cause that's gotta be, I mean, knowing you, I know how active you are and how outdoorsy you are. And if you don't have your mental right, your physical will never be right.
No, exactly. And that's what's normal, you know. That's what I'm accustomed to. So to try to deviate as little as possible from that is really vital.
Yeah.
You know, just even like when I'm in treatments, I'm at UCSD, University of California, San Diego, great program there and stuff. And I stay with my family in North County at the beach. And it's an area that I've always loved. I spent a lot of time, you know, growing up in this area, and it's good to be back in it in a lot of ways, especially right now when it's 115 in the desert and it's in the upper 80s, low 90s in the mountains.
Yeah.
Not as bad, but not really the perfect boot weather.
Yeah.
In the summer.
I found that to be a thing. I made myself a pair of boots finally once I had gotten to the point where I was comfortable enough with making a few, you know, wasting material, making major mistakes to the point where I was like, okay, I might be able to actually make something wearable now. And I made a pair, and I, you know, every time I wear them out, super stiff and hard, and I'm like, but I got to get through this. Like, I know that they're going to break and you have to get through that. And then it got so hot that I'm like, all right, next, once it gets cold, I'll start wearing these things again. It's so
exactly,
I can't wear them right now. Like, if I could just be in sandals in my workshop, I would, but I don't want to drop any knives on my feet or anything like that.
No, that's right. That's right. You know, the other thing I've always had, you know, I have a close group of friends and some guys that I know on Instagram that we call it the Brotherhood of the Traveling Boots.
Yeah.
So we actually swap boots, you know.
That's rad. That's so cool.
Yeah. So, you know, I've got a buddy in Florida and in Arizona and a couple of them here in California, and a couple up in Idaho. So we do that too. So that's kind of cool too. It's a way of expanding your collection and also trying, you know, boots that you don't have, and getting to try those out
rather than making the huge investment, because boots aren't cheap, especially good quality boots.
No, that's for sure.
The majority of the boots that you do have, are they like small batch, like independent makers? Are they like bigger brands? Are they somewhere in between, like Knicks and JK or?
You know, it's pretty well represented. I would say it's like a third, a third, a third. Honestly, you know, I obviously have a pretty big Red Wing collection. Red Wing was and still is, you know, one of my favorite brands. And I have vintage ones. I have very recent ones as well. I would say I really enjoy the small batch. You know, I love the made to order. I think I appreciate those more than ever. And I think that I appreciate them more than ever simply because of where I'm at right now.
Yeah.
You know, they are not just something that I get great pleasure in wearing, but actually just looking at them, just having them on the wall, you know?
Yeah.
I really appreciate the beauty of the craftsmanship.
I do too, so much now that I'm doing it, because I had no idea that like the amount of work that went into making them, the amount of steps that goes into it, the amount of tools you have to invest, the like different kinds of leather you have to do. And, you know, just the steps of it is insane. And, you know, I'd made multiple, not pairs, I would make one one right foot because I knew I was going to blast through material and I just wanted to make my mistakes on one rather than a whole pair until I got to a point that I was like, okay, I want to invest in doing a pair. That one sucked. And then I just keep doing it and doing it and doing it. And my plan was always, well, not my plan, but the inner voice that I have was just like, hey, as long as you make one major improvement with every project that you do, you're good. Don't get down on yourself. You just get through.
That's right.
Start and finish the project, no matter how you screw up along the way. And you've already spent this, you know, into material. So finish strong. And so when I look at boots now, I look at them completely different. Once you put together anything, you're going to look at it different than when you go into, you know, a sports store and look at a pair of boots and you're like, you know, it's just different now.
Well, and there is an evolution. And I mean, I've seen, you know, makers that I connected with back in 2015, 2016, like Junkard and some of the makers in Indonesia, who I became very close with and really appreciated their work and their application of improvement, constant improvement. And they have blown me away, you know, in Orthodox, like as an example, those guys, I started working with them, you know, a few years ago, and the quality is just like astounding.
There's nothing like it. Like anything, it's the difference between going to Tilly's and getting a wallet or getting a handmade custom wallet from, you know, a real craftsman. It's so night and day different.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, you know, Angel is, you know, one of my best friends, and he with Nobleman's Apothecary, you know, he and I actually jumped in his truck to go look at this land that I found in Wyoming.
Yeah.
It was Labor Day 2 years ago, and did a crazy overnight drive. I drove to Mesa, where he was living at the time, and we drove from Mesa to Saratoga, Wyoming.
Oh my gosh.
And of course we brought a shit ton of boots. You know, we brought a bunch of Nick's boots, and we brought some of his belts and his hats, and we've done some fun projects together. And you know, you look at the evolution of his work and the meaning behind that. And Mano from Nordic EDC, we did a collab belt together. We're working on another collab belt for this fall. And the way that his work and his focus on his work and the I guess the place that work has in his life, the way that's evolved is pretty amazing. And that's what is so cool beyond the boot or beyond the belt or whatever it is, you know, beyond the wallet, is the story behind that maker, what it is that motivates them, and the ways in which it takes over. And I love, and this is going to sound terrible, I love to see some people lose their jobs, their day jobs.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it frees them up, and suddenly the crafting becomes their work, and the joy that they get from that.
That's exactly what happened. Awesome. That's exactly what happened with me.
With you, yeah.
Yeah, I was working for a friend, managing some retail locations, you know, midway through COVID, and I had already bought a leather kit at the beginning of COVID when, you know, I was working a different sales job, getting paid really, really good money. But I knew that I wasn't going to be able to cope with being at home, doing nothing for so long. And I got this kit, and then slowly, you know, a leather crafting kit, and slowly I started falling in love with it, was able to sell a few things. And then it turned out that I was able to go from 5 days a week working at that retail location to 4 to 3 to 2. Then I quit. And now
right.
The beginning of 2021 was when I really actually started my business, my LLC. So
yeah.
I'm doing it. It's crazy. It's rad.
It is.
And I feel the same way that you do when I see my friends being able to quit their jobs. It's rad. I made it a lot is. More money before, but I'm the richest I've ever been.
That's right.
That's the difference. Happiness. I think if there's anything I personally learned from COVID, that happiness over anything. Things can come and go so quickly, and you never look back at your life and think, man, I wish I would have spent more time at my job. I wish I would have made more money. That's not how it goes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, and that's where I consider myself incredibly blessed. And you know, that I've started one business after another, and I've loved the businesses that I've owned and that I've operated, whether agency or crafted coffee or, you know, the co-working space for makers, the fashion tech, whatever it has been. I have always really been excited and enjoyed what I did. At the point when I didn't, I made the change, you know, and sometimes I didn't have a choice. Well, 2008 recession sort of buried my first agency. But I recreated myself.
Yeah.
And I focused on new things, and it added, you know, a great deal to my teaching and to my mentoring and whatnot. So it opens up new opportunities and new directions that you can go in. I mean, I have no idea what direction this, because I'm, you know, what, 8 months in, and I'm 4 months into my chemotherapy, and that's every 3 weeks. And it's that in itself is a journey where it's a definite pattern to it. And I don't know where this is all going to take me, but there's that continuum of really enjoying what I do through Boot Hunter, you know, and I continue my teaching. My students love the fact that I do what I do on Boot Hunter. They always get a kick out of, you know, their teacher that's got this following and has this, you know, does designs and whatnot. Because that's
a sneaker. You're a sneakerhead, but a boot head. Is that what it's called? People that are like obsessed with boots, like people are with sneakers.
Yeah, probably. I think that's a good way to put it. And I'm still a sneakerhead.
Yeah,
I still love sneakers. I mean, it's ridiculous.
I think that's great. And like I said, you've been such a huge part of the community. It seems like we definitely run in the same, you know, online circle. And, you know, it broke my heart when I heard that you were diagnosed with cancer, because you're such a good dude. And yeah, it's been, you know, it really hit me hard. I know that we were going to try to meet up, but then everything happened. And what have been some of the changes that you felt that were different immediately, and how you're able to make changes now to get kind of back to where you want to be? Like, what are some of the biggest differences
with the cancer?
Yes.
I'm sorry. You know, it changes everything. Yeah. And yet it changes nothing. Like, I'm still the same person. I still have the same mind. I still have the same capabilities, but I will say, you know, the treatment starts to grind. It's interesting. People have been so incredibly supportive, and I've been just blown away with the support. And it was really important to me to communicate. I'm, you know, obviously I love to communicate. I love to talk to people. I love to share. I love to use any and every opportunity to teach and to inspire. And the diagnosis, it's funny, that's one of the first things that I thought of was, well, I'm going to approach this like I do everything else. I'm not going to be, you know, Pee Wee Herman passing away, and nobody knew that he was fighting cancer for 6 years. And that was a beautiful way for him, who he was, as a comedian, people making people laugh, you know, relieving people's, you know, seriousness and whatnot, letting them be silly. And that made so much sense for me. On the flip side, it made a lot of sense to come right out and say, I have this. This is what's going to be happening. I want you to join me in my fight, you know, and getting the message out there. And that's one of the first things that came to mind is this is going to, you know, be a great opportunity to teach and to inspire others, you know, and to learn from others. It is really difficult for people, and it's difficult for, with friends and associates and with even brands that I've worked with, they try to be easy on me. And I need to tell them, don't be easy on me. I have my up and my down times, you know, but generally I'm moving forward. I'm living, and I'm not going to let this.
You don't want special treatment define is me. What you're saying.
Right. And I don't want people to feel uncomfortable. And it is disquieting in a way. It is an uncomfortable thing. In a way, it's certainly, you know, I think sometimes people, you know, they reach out, we connect, we communicate and whatnot. And that's as it should be.
Right? Yeah. I think people want to genuinely be sensitive to the people that they care about. You know, when I ask you to be on the podcast, like, I really want to open it up to what it is that you feel comfortable talking. Even right before we started this, like, is there anything off limits? Because the way that you are going through it obviously isn't the way that everyone goes through it. The person down the street isn't the same way that you're going through it. And if you have any kind of soul or any kind of heart, you want to take those things into consideration, and not just with cancer, but we're all human beings at the end of the day. You know what I mean? Like, and we want to be able to show empathy. And it's crazy and it's heartbreaking. And me and my wife are really going through it now. My mother-in-law just got diagnosed not long ago with breast cancer. Then I found out last week that my mom has breast cancer, and it's all hitting all at once. And it's scary. It's really, really scary.
It is.
How common it is. And I mean, no means am I trying to compare our story, obviously, to yours or anything like that, because it's apples and oranges, but this doesn't discriminate. It's not.
It doesn't.
There's discrimination.
I never smoked. I spent my whole life being as far away from smoking as possible.
Yeah.
I've always been averse to it. And I've lived pretty healthy and have taken care of myself. To be diagnosed with, you know, stage four lung cancer, I couldn't believe it. And, you know, imagine I was told over the phone while I was driving. That medical group that I was with at that time, that was one of the reasons that I changed, because I was so shocked that they would take that approach. You know, it's like
insensitive.
Yeah, it was pretty, I don't even know what it was low.
Mm-hmm.
And that was so shocking. Absolutely shocking. And to be driving at the time. And that was just, yeah, crazy. But anyway, everybody's story is different. Every cancer is different. Every, you know, and I did all these, like, I read about all these inspiring people and changing diet and doing certain types of exercise and alkaline baths and all these other things. And I realized those were really inspiring. But at the same time, I was reading about all these superhero survivors and then all these tragic stories. And I'm like in the middle there. I'm like this, yeah, you know, kind of mini caped wonder, you know, trying to fight it, you know, with my boots, you know, but I'm not a superhero, and I'm also, I don't want to be a statistic, you know.
You're not a wimp either.
That was it. The thing, then I went into that medical group. I'm not going to say who they were, but anyway, you know, I had my first meeting with who would have been my thoracic oncologist. And she started off diagramming and talking about lung cancer and, you know, mutations and blah, blah, blah. Actually, she didn't even talk about mutations. She just talked about growth and whatnot. So, and then, you know, one of the first things she said is, you know, good news, bad news, you have a 5% chance of survival.
Oh my God.
And I was like, what a gut punch. You know, first you tell me that I've got lung cancer while I'm driving in the car, and then I come into your office and you tell me that I've got, you know, 5% chance of survival. And I was with my sister, and I was like, I completely refuse right now. And I was, my sister and brother-in-law were going to Las Vegas, and I was like, you know what? I said, I think this meeting's over. And I looked at my sister and I said, I'd like to take you guys to Vegas.
Yeah.
And so we took off, and I was like, that's it. I'm going to take control. I'm going to change. I'm going to talk with, you know, different medical, you know, I'm going to go to USC, UCSD. I'm going to go to these different, and doing the campaign, the GoFundMe campaign, that gave me the ability to go and get second and third opinions. And I'm doing some alternative medicine. I'm doing some alternative treatments, which are very fascinating. They include everything from certain types of medicines to certain types of, you know, healing from the past. Because this is a very, you know, it's an unknown why these mutations occur. Why is it that there's a record number of people, men 30s to 50s right now, that are getting lung cancer that have never, I don't have cancer in my family.
Yeah, you know, that's crazy.
My living was clean, and my health was was good, and I never smoked, and you know, so why that is happening, you know, and there's more investment going in now, fortunately. I mean, if I had this even 10 years ago, yeah, I would be gone very quickly.
The science and the medicine around it has improved that much in 10 years. Much.
Yeah.
Wow.
Because that's, you know, great. Quite honestly, the focus, sadly enough, lung cancer was a smoker's disease.
Right.
You did it to yourself. You deserved, in a way, I guess, was sort of the way society looked at it. And medical institutions and whatnot, you know, save somebody with breast cancer, somebody that didn't do anything to bring this on. I've seen, you know, and when I say to people that I have cancer and that I'm fighting, you know, lung cancer, I've always feel like I've got to explain the fact that I've never smoked. It's not small cell, because there's an immediate judgment of, oh, the way you lived,
right?
You know, and that's just so sad, and that's changing, fortunately. But it's changing because so many non-smokers are now being diagnosed.
Getting it. Speaking of which, Brian, I just wanted to check in with you. How's your voice doing right now? Do you want
I'm
to
doing
continue?
Okay.
Okay. I just want to make sure, because I don't want to push you. I know how easy it is to get carried away. Then I certainly, like I said, I don't want to push you. So
I'm good another probably 20 minutes or so.
Do you mind if we take a quick break then and come back? Is that cool?
Absolutely.
All right, let's take a quick break, guys, and we'll be right back with Brian, the Boot Hunter. All right, a quick word from our sponsor. Drum roll, please. Yep, you guessed it. We have no sponsor for this episode, so we might as well sponsor the episode for ourselves. If you're listening to this, go ahead and go over to Instagram and check out 21grams_leathergoods. Back to your unpaid, regular scheduled programming. Welcome back, guys. We are with my good friend, your good friend, Brian Boot Hunter. The man, the myth, the legend, the superhero. Mm-hmm. Man, I really appreciate you sharing your recent story. You're a huge inspiration, like I said, to a lot of people. It's not just me, but you're a huge inspiration to a lot of people. And I appreciate you taking the time to do this so much, man.
Well, I love the opportunity.
It's cool.
I'm a big ham.
I know.
I love to talk. So
I'm the same way. That's the reason why, you know, I stopped doing the podcast for almost a year, just because it started to feel like work. And I was doing so much to try to polish it and make it, you know, do a YouTube channel out of it and then do a clip thing and an Instagram. And it was too much. Now it doesn't even need to be makers. It's just, I have so many awesome friends that I want to have conversations with. And that's why I'm just switching up the approach. I just want to talk to my friends and record it and put it on the internet. It doesn't have to be special. The recording doesn't have to be perfect, but maybe it will inspire somebody. And that's what this is for me. Like I mentioned before the break, me and my wife, both of our moms, are, you know, recently diagnosed with breast cancer. Her dad died of leukemia 3 years ago. So we've been going through it. And, I suppose the question that I have for you is, what can we do, the people that love someone that's going through cancer? What advice would you give that we can make it better for our friends and our family and you and our moms and our dads and everything like that?
I two words. It's be there.
Okay.
It's because, you know, like I said, I think it's tough for people, and it's been tough for me in the past. I was engaged several years ago, and my fiance battled cancer, and I did not deal with it well, and I couldn't muster to be there as much as I should have.
Yeah.
And that has always, you know, it will always be with me. And I realize it's a very human response.
It's scary. That
we just don't know what to do, and we feel bad, and we feel, and there is some discomfort, and there is some, you want to be sensitive. You want to be this, that, and the other. What are you guys doing?
Is that the dogs? Got
dogs and kids running around. Yeah.
I love it. I love it. That's awesome.
Yeah. No, it's awesome. So yeah, my sister's dog is a big lizard hunter.
Oh yeah.
So he's in here right now looking out the window for the lizards. But being there is so important. Being available, just sending messages, touching base. We don't do it enough. I think we all thought we were going to connect more. I thought I was going to connect, and take advantage of the time of COVID. And I squandered a lot of it. And I think a lot of us did.
Yeah.
We had time. We should have and could have connected remotely, whatever, with people. And we just didn't do it enough. And so I would say that's the most important thing that we can do. I have friends that make it really sad, and I can't believe this is happening. This is so tragic. I feel so bad, all of that. It's all well and good, but at a certain point, it's too much.
Yeah, I could totally understand that, especially if you're dealing with somebody that you love that's optimistic, yeah, by nature, like yourself,
right, where
you see the glass half full, and someone's around you that sees it half empty, and you're like, that's not healthy for me. I need to keep my spirits up. And you're doom and gloom all the time. I need someone to tell me, hey, you're a fighter, you're gonna get through this. Not like they're saying their last words to me,
Exactly.
Yeah, I'm not gone yet. Let's have fun. Let's do stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah, I know for myself, it's pretty tricky, even though I love doing this podcast. Because I can see, the person I'm talking to face to face, even though it's an audio podcast, we're talking over Zoom where we can see each other. I have such a hard time talking on the phone, picking up a phone and putting it to my ear and stopping from what it is that I'm doing. Cause I work a lot. There's no two ways around it. And for example, with my grandpa who can hardly hear, I can't have him on speakerphone. If I have my earpiece in, then it's, every word that I say is huh. And he's just, old people, they talk over you. That's difficult with, my mom that's going through this. It's difficult to just constantly call. And it's like,
right,
I have such a hard time, but with what you're saying, it doesn't matter if I have a hard time with it. Like, reach out, be there for them, check in on them. And that's a huge motivation for me to realize that this isn't about me. This isn't about what's comfortable for me. They're going through what they're going through, and they need us,
Yeah. And I think, in the case of, very close family, friends, spouses, for them to share their triumphs and how things that are going well is heartening. It's strengthening. And I think that's another thing that people are afraid to really share. Hey, you know, I just got a new job. This is what I'm doing now, like whatever. I think that
there's a sense of guilt about it because your life's going well and somebody just got, you know, they're going through cancer. You feel guilty to tell them, like, hey, I'm doing this cool. I'm all of these things, you know, that. Yeah, yeah, you're right. That's
and we're not sitting, you know, those of us that are battling are not sitting here saying, yes, somebody else is in pain, you know, or, you know, losing those jobs and whatever. Yeah. It's not at all. I mean, it's uplifting. It's like, it's normal, you know, to be able to have that conversation and to be excited for others.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I think those are, I'll tell you, it is so alienating. I find cancer to be incredibly alienating, where I've never felt so outside in my life because I have these limitations that, and I have this uncertainty, and I really try not to focus on it too much, but it's always there. Yeah. It's always thrust on. I mean, I've been so good about diet and, like, you know, cut out the sugar, cut out the carbs, cut out this and that. But, you know, honestly, there were times during my trip, I was at this diner in Oregon and I was just ridiculous. I was like, okay, I want the lingonberry blintzes and I'm going to get the pancakes and I'm going to get, I order two or three things and I eat part of it because I can't eat that much. I don't have that much appetite. And
sure. You want to taste it. You want to taste a little bit of it.
Start to be good, but then it's like, okay, I don't like this anymore. And I've learned to continue to enjoy by tasting different things. And you just, you do feel outside, and it's a feeling that I've never had in my life. Well, it's maybe in junior high, going to a new school. That's a weird analogy, but it's probably a good one. It's just kind of like, wow, I don't feel like I'm a part of all of these other things going on. That's where I say being there, communicating, sharing, that's all really important.
I would never compare anything, and I can't say that I know exactly what you mean, but it's almost a visual thing in the sense that I'm imagining you feeling like you aren't you because you love hiking. You love being able to do this and do that. But because you can't, it almost feels like you aren't you, which is traumatizing, I'm sure.
You lose part of you.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, or it's not readily there. It's something that you're battling to get back.
I have been able to see that in my life through my mother-in-law, who is the strongest, not just physical, but mental, emotional, the strongest woman that I've ever met in my life. And she loves gardening. She loves shopping. She'll pull in the Sparklets bottles, no problem. You know, she's physically strong. Yeah. And to see her going through, you know, the first few weeks, it's very optimistic. But when you start not being able to do what you love, and not only that, but you can't do things that make you, there, it is no longer just a physical thing. It becomes a mental thing. And that's what I see that's the hardest. The hardest part is, you know, being out back and she's trying to, you know, pick weeds, and I'm like, stop. Like, this is what I, you know, I can do it, but kind of have to let them do what they're gonna do a little bit too, you know.
Let them do it. Yeah.
Yeah, until they can't, and then, you know, it's a rough thing to see from a distance. And you know, when you care about someone, it's not just them that's going, you know, it's not just the person going through it. If you
Right.
have good family, like, and it's hard. Me and my sister talk almost every single day and like have to come up with strategies and what we're going to do with my. She lives on the other side of the country, and you know, there's only so much she can do remotely from there. And
Right.
you start having to make some decisions. And unfortunately, I love my mom to death. She's just not very physically healthy, you know. She's already
Yeah.
had so many illnesses prior to this that, you know, we're just praying that she doesn't have to go through the chemo phase, because that's so detrimental on the body. It's different, you know,
is.
than having your breast removed. It's a totally different thing, you know. And
It is. Yeah. I
yeah.
mean, I thank God that I have it. You know, it's keeping my battle going, because it's stalling the progression, basically. I was really hopeful in the beginning because I was on a directed treatment called Tagrisso, and when that wasn't working to the extent it needed to, that hit hard when I had to start doing chemo. You know, and like I said, it's every 3 weeks, and you know, it's the first couple of days, 2 or 3 days, I'm super up, like I feel really good.
Yeah.
And then, wow, I just the like day 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, I
Just
am
drop off.
lowest of the low. I am exhausted. I can't eat. I don't want to eat. Nothing tastes good. I drink lots of fluids because I'm basically fasting during that time.
Yeah.
And I then start to crawl out of that, and a few things start to taste good. And then I get more and more, you know, less fatigued, more appetite, et cetera, and then boom, it's time for the next
So
chemo.
it's just all up and down. And
So that cycle, yeah.
man, that is you know, that's rough. How do you keep yourself? I mean, we just went over, you know, something that I think will help a lot of people that are have family members that are going through things like this. But how, from your end, somebody that's actually battling this all day, every day, this is your life. Like, what do you do both mentally and physically to keep yourself strong day after day after day when you're down and out and you feel depressed? And
Yeah.
what do you do to keep your spirits up?
So one thing that I've become more faithful again, and I've started praying, and I actually have this app called Halo that's started by Mark Wahlberg, and it's got a number of different people on it. It's got athletes, actors, it's got religious people, et cetera. I tune into that. I tune into some inspiring, you know, more like generally spiritual podcasts and things like that. Those have helped in the beginning and the end of the day. in particular at the end of the day. I think during the day, being interested in things as much as possible, reading. I have gotten more nostalgic. I'm going back to things that I, you know, enjoyed back in high school or college. Old, you know, I try to watch comedies. I have really curtailed my consumption of the news because the news is just so it's so devastating.
It's doom
in
porn.
So many ways. I just have tuned out. And as a teacher, that's tough. You know, in fact, it's even bringing into question to what extent I'm going to teach here on out, because I'm just not, I can't bring all that on. And I have to tell people, you know, people start to get negative and start to get in, this is with family in particular, like so-and-so did this, and then this happened. And it's like, I've got to stop them and say, look, I
don't want to fill my, I don't want to fill my hard drive with negative shit.
And I don't want to be this cold, insensitive person, but at the same time, you know what? I'm fighting here and I'm doing everything I can to stay positive. And I really need you to stay positive, you know? So I'm constantly doing that as well. I go through bouts of just, and this is several times a week, that I just cry.
Yeah.
You know, I just have to break down and it's so shocking to me still that I find it hard to believe at times. You know, and it's really difficult to see the light in the tunnel. I don't like to say the end of the tunnel, because there's something beautiful there on the other side of that tunnel. There's something to explore. And I'm dealing with it all the time. Like, I'm going to do another road trip. And I'm grappling with right now, am I going to work? Am I going to teach? And then it makes it difficult for me to go on road trips because I've got to have good internet and I've got to be guaranteed of that. Where am I going to get my most joy out of? What am I giving up? So this is a time of great introspection for me. Is like, and I've only got like 3 weeks to decide for the fall semester. It's like, am I going to teach or am I going to travel? What am I going to do?
Do you find that having one quick thing, just because I want to touch on this and then I have kind of a question for you. But when you were saying that it's hard for you to grapple with the fact that you have cancer, that was something that when I spoke to my mom recently, she's all, you know, optimistic, like, oh yeah, you know the comedy that relieves stress, where she's making jokes like, oh yeah, you know, I had fun with these boobs for so long, and you know, my back isn't gonna hurt anymore, all of the things that are optimistic. And then, you know, I'm like, but how are you? And she's like, I haven't come to terms that I have cancer. Like, I don't,
right,
it hasn't like sunk in that this is what it is. It almost seems like an outer body thing. So to hear that from you, I think it's just something that comes along with that. And
right.
I suppose the question that I have is, do you feel that, because hope is, I think, I mean, I don't, I'm assuming again that hope is so important to have when something is like this. And Do you find that setting dates in the future, whether that's okay, I'm going to go on a road trip in 2 months, or I'm going to go do this in 3 months, do you feel that that gives you hope in the sense of like putting one foot in front of the other, something to look forward to?
It so ostensibly, yes, it does. But when, like, I had a big setback last week because the catheter, porta catheter that they put me in or put in me to relieve all the jabs that I'm having on my arms, what do you call it? Infected.
Okay.
So I ended up in emergency. I ended up in the hospital. I had an absolutely horrific experience in the hospital where I was housed in the same room with a murderer,
Oh, wow.
prisoner. Things that just completely shocked me and scared me to the point where I will do anything and everything I can to stay out of the hospital. And I'm with a very top-notch
Medical
medical
facility.
facility, although unfortunately I was at their one that's not as top-notch, but anyway, there's always gradients between different facilities. But the reason I mentioned that is there's a fear that, if I go someplace, if I make, like, I thought, I should really go on a cruise. But if I go on a cruise and something happens and I have to be life flighted, it's not only could be life-threatening, but it's financially devastating. There's certain confines that this puts on you, where now I feel like I can only go where it's a day drive. So now
Yeah.
I'm planning trips into Arizona, into Utah and Central California and whatnot. I'm trying to go to places that are small and manageable. I'm not going to go to Las Vegas and stay in a mega hotel because that's
Right.
overwhelming. It's too much. It's
Too stimulating.
yeah, and it's too far from the car to the room to the everything is just too much where it's like I need to stay at the Rosebud
Yeah.
Motel, in Schitt's Creek.
Yeah, I love
And
it.
I need to
Love
get
it.
down and local and that kind of planning does inspire me and does make me look forward. Doing some more work on the house, that's inspiring to me. But now instead of doing the work myself, I'm going to need to get somebody to do it,
Yeah. I suppose in my head is like setting goals and setting knowing how strong of a dude you are and how, driven you are. Obviously you're a serial entrepreneur. You've done and seen and, started things and seen them through to be able to have like goals. Like, okay, well, and through whatever that is. It doesn't mean like you said, going on a cruise or traveling to, to Bali or something like that, but just the thing to do next week, the next month, the next 3 months, the next 6 months is something that you feel like then you're needed, I guess, for whatever it is, you need to show up for it.
Yeah, that's a big part of, what really brings me back to, yeah, I should continue to teach because I love my interaction with my students and I like the fact that, and they know about my situation. And it's pretty amazing. I mean, my students are from a variety of countries. You know, I teach in the UK and Denmark
Okay.
remotely. You know, and my students at the end of class say, "We love you." And it, you know, it's like it's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
You know, because I'm very real to them.
Yeah,
You
honest.
know, yeah.
Yeah.
And that's very heartening, and it gives me a lot of inspiration.
I think you're giving a lot of, I mean, you're giving me huge inspiration. I'm sure that the people that are tuned in now, you know, unfortunately, the world that we live in, there's everyone knows someone that either, you know, that has gotten cancer one way or another, or they
Right.
are, you know, it's a part of the daily life that we have with our with the relationships that we have. And I think that if I'm the only person that listens to this in the future, you did a huge blessing to me that I've learned a lot in how to be there for my mother-in-law, my own mom, and
That's awesome.
to have that kind of optimism and what I can you know, try to do the best that I can. You know, I can't carry
Right.
the world on my shoulders, but
No.
I can at least try to do what I can and make it as important as possible. And just like you said, just be there. Just be there.
Yeah. Exactly. And
Just be
I'm
there.
so glad, you know, it's another thing, like what I tell my students and my nieces and nephews, do anything and everything you can now. I'm so thankful that I traveled like a crazy ass
Yeah.
for 2 decades. You know, I lived, I worked, I traveled in various countries, continents, you know, in Asia, Africa, Europe. You know, I started companies, I partied my ass off. You
Took
know,
risks.
I took risks, I bought cars and homes. I worked my butt off, and I did so much, and I'm so thankful that I did it, because those memories are with me as reality of today.
Yeah.
You know, that when you asked just before, how else do I, you know, fill my day? I mean, looking back at pictures, thinking back about times, places that I've been, people I've been with, and then just reaching out and sharing with people, "Hey, remember when we were at blah, blah, blah?" You know,
Yeah.
that's incredibly, incredibly inspiring, you know, and you just don't know what tomorrow is going to bring. So do what you can and want to do today.
I've got all the goosebumps. Thanks. Thanks, bro. You got me. Well, I want to end on a high note. I know
Yeah.
I don't want to make it so that you regret this this conversation and you feel hoarse. Plus I need to call my mom, right? You inspired me. Got to
You
do it
do.
right away. Thank you so much, Brian. I hope you'll come back on in three
Oh,
months,
absolutely.
then 6 months, something to look forward to. I'm sure everyone's gonna love to hear from you and your victories and successes.
Yes, and we have to meet up, and we, yeah.
We'll make it happen. You take care of yourself first. I probably gave you a couple too many guilt trips now that I think of it. We'll get together. We'll get
Yeah,
together
we
because
will.
you're gonna beat this shit and it's gonna give us reason to celebrate, my friend.
Absolutely. Big hug.
All right. I love you, dude. You're my
I
guy.
love you too.
You're the best, Brian. Thank you so much.
All right.
And I appreciate you.
Likewise.